The BLS just confirmed something that has never happened outside of formal recession in U.S. economic history. 6 consecutive months of net job destruction every single month of Q2 and Q3 2025, confirmed through quarterly Census of Employment and Wages revisions. Danielle DiMartino Booth of QI Research flagged this, and the downstream implications are not subtle. The BEA is now mechanically obligated to revise personal consumption expenditure estimates downward. GDP revisions expected in Q3 and Q4 of this year may formally declare what the labor data is already telling us. We are in a technical recession. The question for financial services executives is not whether this is happening. The question is whether your credit models, your CECL inputs, and your funding assumptions are priced for a world that no longer exists. The broader fintech pattern here is a simultaneous compression of both engines that have driven sector growth for the better part of a decade. Consumer credit expansion and equity market-driven wealth effects are under structural pressure at the same time, and understanding how they're interacting is critical. Start with the consumer. The average monthly payment on a financed new vehicle has hit a record $773. 20% of American households are carrying car payments above $1,000 per month. Credit card and auto loan delinquency rates are at their highest since 2008 and 2009. The Atlanta Fed wage tracker shows wage growth has fully reversed its post-pandemic gains, returning to 2019 levels. And yet, blended year-over-year EPS growth for Q1 2026 is running at 27%, the strongest reading since Q4 2021. How do both of those things coexist? The answer is a K-shaped bifurcation that aggregate data obscures. The top 20 to 40% of income earners are sustaining consumption metrics. Lower income cohorts are exhibiting classic pre-delinquency demand destruction. New York Fed research from Q1 2026 documented measurable declines in real gasoline consumption among lower income households, and that indicator typically precedes delinquency elevation by 60 to 90 days. For any lender with concentration in non-prime or near-prime consumer segments, that 60 to 90-day clock is already running. Building on that consumer stress picture, look at where equity valuations sit. Michael Pinto of Pinto Portfolio Strategies places the total market cap to GDP ratio at 227%, against a historical mean of 90%. The Shiller Cape is at 41 times earnings, the second highest reading in recorded history, below only the March 2000 peak of 42x. Lance Roberts of Real Investment Advice identifies 4 converging correction precursors. The S&P 500 is trading significantly above its 50, 100, and 200-day moving averages simultaneously. Technology sector relative strength has reached 0.93 on a scale of 1.0, approaching theoretical maximum concentration. Sentiment is at maximum bullish readings, and speculative positioning is at multi-year extremes. Roberts's primary summer 2026 correction scenario targets the S&P 500 at 6, 850 to 6, 900, a 10 to 15% decline, with a more severe 15 to 20% bear case if oil price elevation persists another 4 to 6 months. For fintech firms relying on equity markets for primary capital raises, Klarna's IPO process being the most prominent current example, overall investor positioning at the 80th percentile across Darius Dale's 42 macro indicator model suggests urgency and execution timing. The window is open, but the configuration of equity-implied volatility correlations at the third percentile and market-neutral hedge fund net exposure at the 97th percentile means mean reversion risk is not theoretical. Looking at the regulatory landscape, 3 pressure points are converging simultaneously and each carries a different timeline. The CFPB's Section 1033 open banking rule is live. Largest banks above $500 billion in assets faced an April 2026 compliance deadline, and mid-sized banks in the $10 to $50 billion range are on the clock for April 2027. API infrastructure build-out is running $2 to $5 million with a 12 to 18-month implementation window. That is not a future planning item for mid-sized institutions. That project is underway or it is late. The FDIC's enforcement actions against Blue Ridge Bank and Evolve Bank and Trust for BSA and AML compliance gaps have established a supervisory precedent that is materially repricing the embedded lending and BaaS model. The compliance cost and capital requirement assumptions embedded in most embedded finance partnerships executed between 2020 and 2023 are no longer accurate. And the OCC and FDIC's 300% of risk-based capital threshold for CRE loan concentrations is becoming acutely relevant as distressed office sales hit decade highs and private CRE credit funds begin gating redemptions. That last point connects directly to the most significant structural risk in the current environment. DeMartino Booth cited a confirmed redemption gate at a commercial real estate private credit fund, and she is explicit that this is not firm-specific stress. This is the beginning of a transmission mechanism with a documented historical precedent. In June 2007, public investment grade and high-yield spreads were at cycle tights. Private credit, then manifested as subprime mortgage securities, was already showing fundamental deterioration. Public markets provided no corroborating signal for approximately 12 months before spread widening became rapid and nonlinear. Today, BB-rated and CCC-rated spreads are at or near historic lows. Private credit stress is confirmed. The lag between those two conditions narrowing is the risk that is not currently priced. The Merrill Lynch Move Index, Treasury volatility, provides a 4 to 8 week lead time on equity volatility events through the rate transmission mechanism. DeMartino Booth identifies it as the highest priority leading indicator for banking executives right now. If it is not on your daily risk dashboard, that is a governance gap that needs to close before the signal fires. The Federal Reserve's position in all of this is a structural paralysis. Darius Dale's framing that the Fed should effectively do a whole lot of nothing captures it precisely. Easing is precluded by credit growth acceleration and fiscal deficits running at 5.5 to 6.0% of GDP. Tightening risks accelerating labor market stress atop a baseline that is already confirmed to be contracting. The 30-year Treasury yield at 5.02 to 5.03%, with annual marketable Treasury supply at approximately $12 trillion, more than double the prior cycle's $5 trillion, representing roughly 40% of global savings, against a 20% long-run mean, structurally constrains bond market accommodation. The more important forward-looking variable is the policy posture of incoming Chair Kevin Warsh. DeMartino Booth's highest priority advisory is development of a crisis playbook that avoids defaulting to zero-bound rates and universal QE. If the next liquidity stress event is met with targeted repo facilities or sectoral credit facilities rather than broad asset purchases, the asset price dynamics and funding cost assumptions embedded in bank ALM models require recalibration now, not reactively. For fintech lenders on warehouse lines or in securitization markets that assume a traditional Fed backstop, the non-QE scenario is a tail risk that is not priced into current funding cost assumptions. On the international side, the reserve diversification signal is structural and accelerating. The IMF COFR data shows the dollar share of global foreign exchange reserves has declined from 71% in 2000 to 58% in 2024. The World Gold Council confirms 95% of central banks plan gold purchases in 2026, with none planning reductions. A structural demand floor driven by the February 2022 immobilization of Russian central bank reserves, functioning as a live demonstration of dollar-denominated seizure risk. China's CIPIPS payment system processed approximately $12 trillion in 2023 and is growing at 25% annually. For cross-border payment platforms with emerging market corridor exposure, this is both a regulatory complexity increase and a competitive displacement risk as bilateral settlement arrangements mature. For institutions with existing precious metals operations, there is a fee income opportunity worth quantifying. Custodian economics of 5 to 15 basis points annually on assets under custody imply $50 to $150 million in annual fee income at $100 billion in assets under custody, with multi-year demand visibility that is structurally superior to most fee income growth opportunities available in the current credit cycle environment. Fintech thesis update. What changed today is the degree of confirmation. The labor market deterioration that fintech credit models have been treating as a tail scenario is now the baseline, confirmed by revised federal data, corroborated by consumer delinquency metrics, and converging with equity overextension and private credit stress in a configuration that has a documented historical analog. 2007 comparison DiMartino, Booth, and Vokes is not hyperbole. It is a sequencing model. Private credit stress precedes public market recognition by 6 to 12 months. We are somewhere in that window. CECL inputs, duration assumptions, and funding cost models built for the prior cycle require immediate recalibration, not as a planning exercise, but as a governance imperative. Thank you for listening. That's your FinTech Macro Observer briefing for today, watching the convergence of credit, rates, and real economy data so you can stay ahead of where the rails are bending. Come back tomorrow. Watching the rails. Until tomorrow.